This is the Anthem CDA podcast, a church in the heart of downtown Coeur d'Alene. Join us as we seek the presence of God, learn from His Word, and build lifelong connections. We hope this week's teaching brings life and encouragement. Welcome to Anthem.
Well, Merry Christmas, guys. We made it. Okay, my name is Heather. We would like to welcome you guys to Garden. We're so excited you joined us for Christmas Eve. At this moment, we are going to have Gary, who is one of our elders and volunteers in kids ministry. He is going to sit over here and read a story to all of our kiddos. So if you are in elementary school or under, you can go over this way to my right, where Gary's going to read a story, and then if you didn't grab one of the Christmas bags already, we're going to give you one of those. So parents, you can go ahead and be seated, or you're welcome to join your littles over here. But we're going to take a few minutes for a story with our kids. Okay, so also I forgot to mention, if you have very little littles that aren't going to make it through service or you just need a moment, we do have a family room set up right through those double doors. So if you need to, there's a place set up for you. And now Gary is going to read us our story.
All right. I feel like a big grandpa up here, which I am, but not this big. Keep coming. You can hopefully find a place. There's some little corners over here up front too, on a carpet even. Come. You know, as people are still coming up, I was thinking I was going to wear my shepherd costume tonight, but I thought, no. And I was thinking about shepherds too, because we're going to read a story about the shepherds and also a star. But shepherds, I think, and I may be wrong about this, I am an English teacher by trade, but I think it comes from a sheep herder. You know sheep herders, everybody? Shepherd, sheep herder. And I thought, you know, I don't need to wear that shepherd costume because I've got chickens in my yard. I've got 11 of them. So I'm a chicken herder, okay? You could shorten it up, say chickered, I don't know, instead of shepherd. But that being said, let's get to this story, okay? This is called The Light of the World, and it's from the Children's Bible. It's the story of the shepherds from Luke 2, okay? So that same night, in amongst the other stars, and suddenly a bright new star appeared. All of the stars in the dark vaulted heavens. This one shone clearer. It blazed in the night and made the other stars look pale beside it. God put it there when his baby son was born to be like a spotlight, showing people the way to him. You see, God was like a new daddy. He couldn't keep the good news to himself. He'd been waiting all these long years for this moment, and now he wanted to tell everyone. So he pulled out all of the stops. He sent an angel to tell Mary the good news. He put a special star in the sky to show where his boy was. And now he was going to send a big choir of angels to sing his happy song to the world. He's here. He's come. Go and see him, my little boy. Now, where would you send your splendid choir? To a big concert hall? No. Okay. Or to a palace, maybe? No. God sent his to a little hillside outside a little town in the middle of the night. He sent all of those angels to sing for a raggedy old bunch of shepherds watching their sheep outside Bethlehem. And in those days, remember, people used to laugh at shepherds. And they said they were smelly and they called them other rude names, which I can't really possibly mention at this time, okay? But you see here, people thought shepherds were nobodies, just scruffy little old riffraff. But God must have thought shepherds were very important indeed, because they were the ones he chose to tell the good news to first. But God must have thought shepherds were very, well, I'm repeating myself, but anyway. That night, some shepherds were out in the open fields warming themselves by a campfire when suddenly the sheep darted. They were frightened by something. The olive trees rustled. What was that? A wing beat? They turned around. Standing in front of them was a huge warrior of light blazing in the darkness. "Don't be afraid of me," the bright shining man said. "I haven't come to hurt you. I've come to bring you happy news for everyone everywhere. Today in David's town in Bethlehem, God's son has been born. You can go and see him. He's sleeping in a manger." Behind the angel, they saw a strange glowing cloud, except it wasn't a cloud. It was angels, troops and troops of angels, armed with light. And they were singing a beautiful song. "Glory to God. To God be fame and honor in all of our hoorays." Then as quickly as they appeared, the angels left. The shepherds stamped out their fire, left their sheep, raced down the grassy hill through the gates of Bethlehem, down the narrow cobble streets, through a courtyard, down some steps, past the inn, around a corner, through the hedge, until at last they reached a tumble-down stable. They caught their breath, and then quietly they tiptoed inside. They knelt on the dirt floor. They had heard about this promised child, and now he was here. Heaven's son, the maker of the stars, a baby sleeping in his mother's arms. This baby would be like that bright shining star in the sky that night, a light to light up the whole world, chasing away darkness, helping people to see. And the darker the night got, the brighter the star would shine. There you go. Are you guys all ready for Christmas? Yeah. Okay. Well, before you leave too, and we have something to give you, and then also kids who didn't come up front as well, we have some at the door as well. But so as you leave, you, on either side, I believe, is that right? Either side? Here or back there by the lights back there. She's holding it up. So make sure you get one of those, okay? And thank you guys for coming. All right, bless you.
The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through them, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth.
Let me pray for us. Jesus, we thank you for this moment, Lord, that we get to be together, but that we get to be together and acknowledge the true reason for this holiday that we celebrate. And I pray, God, that you would invade this place. Would you move through your word? Would you speak to us tonight? Would you draw people to yourself tonight, God? Would we acknowledge you as ever so present in this room and part of our lives? God, we need sometimes a reason to stop in the busyness of our lives to focus our attention on you and be reminded of what this is all for. And so, Jesus, thank you for this time, and we just give it to you in your name. Amen. And you guys can be seated. Well, how are we doing so far? You guys okay? 4:30, you guys did it. Give yourselves a hand. You made it here. Do I have any Seahawks fans in the room? It's a great week to be a Seahawks fan, right? No? Fans that didn't watch the last game, apparently, right? Well, I wanted to start out by just sharing a brief story. Last week, my family and I, the four of us, were able to attend this legendary Seahawks game that just happened. And it was an interesting experience. I'll just to set it up for you a little bit. It took us 8 hours to get over the pass because the pass was shut down. We got to the game a quarter into it, and I was just frustrated at that point, right? Dropped my family off at the stadium, and then I go to find parking. My family, you know, misses the first quarter. I miss almost the whole second quarter. And by the time I get there, I'm just so frustrated. But if you watch the game, what you know is that the game didn't really start till the fourth quarter. So, and it went into overtime, so I still got to make up what I lost. But we were at this game, and if you have watched it or know, I don't talk a lot about football from the stage, but this was a moment for me that I probably will never forget. But it was late in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks were down. It honestly looked like they were going to lose. There's this play that on the goal line at the very end. And in real time, it looked like kind of an ordinary play. Nobody really knew that it was going to get reviewed. And immediately after the play was done, thousands of people started leaving the stadium. And I was looking around, and I'm like, I looked at my wife, I'm like, this is crazy. Like, we spent so much money on these tickets. Like, why would you leave? You know, even if they're going to lose, like, why would you leave? We're fans. We're sticking in it, right? And all these people, just droves of people start leaving the stadium. And they're not, it's not dramatic. They're not angry. But they sort of leave with their heads down and their shoulders slumped. And the Seahawks fans were bummed out. It was kind of like a defeated walk. And I had this moment where I realized, like, it's not that they're bad fans. They're making the best decision that they can in the time that they have with the information that they have. But from everything they could see in this moment, the story was finished. And yet what they didn't realize, because nobody knew it, was that the play was about to go under review, that they were going to find some things, that they were going to kind of call it back. They were going to give them this two-point conversion. And that it would drastically change the course of the game from there. And by the time the ruling came down, thousands of people had already left the stadium and missed this moment. And I've been thinking about this all week long since this game. Not because it was this dramatic football moment or this amazing football moment per se, but because what I realized was that this moment felt like every human moment. That we are a people who are very quick to decide when a story is finished for ourselves. And that's exactly the tension that John is addressing when he tells this Christmas story. Heather just read a piece of it. John wants us to sort of slow down for a moment, long enough to see what it is that God is actually doing. And so before we talk about why people missed Jesus, John first tells us what God was doing in the world. He says this in John 1:9. He says, "The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world." Like, this single sentence right here tells us something very profound. That Christmas is not humanity searching for God. That is not the objective of this holiday. That Christmas is actually God coming to us. And John calls Jesus the true light, like the legit light, the only light. Not one option amongst many of lights, not some sort of helpful perspective, but the light by which everything else is seen clearly. And I want you to notice what John is emphasizing here, because there's the direction that this verse is pitched in. He says, was coming, meaning that was being born into, that he was coming into the world, that he was entering into it, that God is acting, that God is moving, that God is not waiting for the world to get its act together so that he can come. He came. And light doesn't negotiate with darkness, does it? Light enters into darkness. It pierces darkness. But if God was truly at work, if the light had really come, then the natural question would be this. How could so many people have missed him if he was the true light? How did they miss him? And John immediately tells us something sobering in John 1:10. He says, he was in the world, and he says, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not what? Know him. Catch that. The creator of the universe was in the world. He was here. The world itself was made through him. And yet the creation he made did not know him. So the creator steps into his creation and goes unrecognized virtually. He wasn't rejected immediately. He wasn't attacked. He was overlooked. And John goes on to say this in John 1:11, that he came to his own and his own people did not receive him, right? They were waiting for God, his people. They just didn't expect him to look like this and they missed it. They expected power, and here Jesus comes in complete humility. They expected a spectacle, and here Jesus comes quietly in a manger. They expected certainty, and here Jesus comes vulnerably. This baby in a manger did not look like salvation. This carpenter from Nazareth doesn't look like some king. And so many people looked at Jesus and thought to themselves, this can't be it. There's just no way this is it. And they walk away. They just walk away. And John doesn't leave us with rejection as his final word in this passage. Like in the very next verse, he shows us that missing Jesus was not the only option they had. It says this in John 1:12. But to all who did what? Receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. And so some people stayed and acknowledged him for who he is. Some trusted that God was doing something they didn't fully understand yet. And notice the word that John uses. He says, receive. So these were people, you and I, that did not earn this, that can't achieve it, that can't prove anything to him. And you see, Christianity is not about cleaning yourself up before God accepts you. It's about opening your hands to what God has already done. And so to believe in Jesus is not to have every answer. It's to trust him with your entire life. And then John takes us even deeper, and he shows us what was actually happening beneath the surface in this first Christmas moment. He says this in John 1:14. And the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. This is the Christmas story. That God does not stay distant, that God does not remain abstract, that God actually comes close, that the eternal enters into time, that the infinite actually becomes intimate, that the word becomes flesh. And the Greek word that is used here for this word in English is this word logos. It means word, it means message. And so the message that they had all heard, the message that they had listened to, actually took on flesh and became human. And John tells us something really essential about Jesus in this passage. He says that Jesus was full of grace and truth. How many of you would look around at our world right now and say, our world needs a little grace and it needs a little truth? These are two things that we are missing in this world. We're missing a grace that welcomes us, and we're missing a truth that transforms us. And Jesus was the culmination of the two. Not one without the other, it was both and. I think that C.S. Lewis captured this amazingly when he wrote this. He said, "The Son of God became a man to enable men to become sons of God." Son of God became a man to enable men to become sons of God. That's Christmas. Eugene Peterson amazingly said it like this. He said, "God moved into the neighborhood." And I love that quote. God rolled into the neighborhood. Like he came, the creator of it all moved in with us. Like how crazy is that? You see, God's not demanding something from you and trying to squeeze it out of you, but God is giving himself to you through his son Jesus. And so as John pulls all of this together, he leaves us with this truth that sits at the very heart of Christmas. This thought that Christmas is the story of a God who came closer than we could have ever imagined. And it's also the tragedy of how often we decide too soon that he isn't what we need. It's this double-sided coin. And the question is no longer what God has done, but how is it that you will respond? Because he did. But how will you respond? You see, John has been showing us something all throughout this text. The issue has never been whether the light came. The issue is what we do when it does. What will you do with the light? And so to receive Jesus is not simply to admire him. To receive him is not to just agree with him or to feel inspired by Jesus or to fan out on him. To receive him is to step out of the darkness that we've learned so well to live in this world that we are in, and to entrust ourselves into the hands of the light, the true light. And this is why John can say earlier in the same passage, in 1:5, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. I love that passage. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Notice what John doesn't say here. He doesn't say that the darkness understands light. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say that the darkness welcomes the light. He says that the darkness cannot overcome it, which means the light of Christ does not wait for permission. It doesn't retreat. It doesn't flicker out when things get hard. It actually shines. And so the question tonight is not whether there is darkness in your life. That's not what I'm trying to prod at tonight. But the question is whether you are willing to step into the light that is already here, to participate with it, in it. To receive Jesus is to say, I'm done trusting the dark to tell me who I am, and I'm actually ready to let the light define me, not someday, but like right now, tonight. Before we close, I'm gonna have the band come up. John sort of brings us right back to the question that we started with. Will we stay, or will we decide too soon that the story is over? That's something that I hope you can wrestle with tonight. Will you stay, or will you decide for yourself that the story's over? There's nothing else to experience or to see here. John says in John 1:5, again, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And when I read that text, what I realize is that this isn't some sort of gentle image. This is a very defiant image if you read this, right? The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. John doesn't say that the darkness fades on its own. John doesn't say that the darkness slowly improves. He says that the light shines and the darkness cannot overtake it. Which means the question has never been whether the light is strong enough. The question is whether we will remain long enough to see what it is that the light is doing. Many will choose to leave early. And that was just a harsh reality the other night as I'm watching that game. I'm like, dang, this is so indicative of the church, of believers. When I look back on the course of my life, I realize probably 80 to 90% of the people that I started with in this faith journey are no longer on this journey. A lot will choose to go. A handful will choose to stay. Many will make up for themselves this idea that the story is finished. Many will believe that the darkness is already won, that there's no way to combat it. But the Christmas narrative does speak to us something very differently. In a moment, when we light these candles, we're not pretending that the darkness is gone when we light them. We're actually declaring that the darkness doesn't get the final word. That the minute the light steps into it, it changes everything around it. Like each small flame that you guys will hold up tonight is a quiet but courageous choice to remain, to stay, to believe that God is still at work even when the night feels long. And might I remind us, even though you don't need me to, that right now in our world, the night feels long. But it does not have the last word. And as we sing, "O Holy Night," we're literally standing in this tension tonight. The same tension that John describes, right? That darkness is still present, but that the light is already shining. We're reminded of that. We're reminded daily of the darkness that's around us. But tonight, you get a second to hold up a candle and to see the impact of the light and realize darkness has no say when light is present. It does not get the final word. And so tonight, my encouragement to you, I don't know where you're at. My encouragement is that you don't leave early. And I don't mean from this service. We're gonna hold you hostage. You're staying till the end. We have another 2 hours. But that you don't bail early. Because there's something that Jesus has for you. And sometimes that something comes through moments that you choose to remain and stay when everybody else takes off. And you get to be the recipient of, you get to watch the blessing in the end. I want to remind you that the light has come. That the darkness has not overcome it. I'm going to ask the candle lighters to come row by row, if you guys would stand with me. And we're going to light the candles. And I'm going to ask you guys, as your candle's lit, would you hold them high? Because I want you to see the impact of the light in the dark. You know, over the course of 16 years since we started this church, I've done this 16 times. Actually, Christmas Eve is our birthday as a church. And there isn't one year that goes by that this part of this service doesn't rock me. Because as you hold your light high, except for this whole section over here, you guys, apparently you don't get light, it's okay. You get to see everybody else's light. But as you hold it light, you hold it high, like I want you to see the impact of that. And if half of the room were to blow their candles out right now, you would see the impact of half of the room leaving. There's something about the light coming into the world and the darkness having no say against it. And so as you hold those candles high and we sing this song, I want you to sing this song and be reminded of how important that light is. I want this to represent the courage you have to stand before the world and say, the light of the world isn't something just for you. It's something that exists within me. And I am going to allow this light to shine as brightly as Jesus wants it to. I want you to take just 10 seconds. I want you to close your eyes, calm your heart. And I want you to hear from the Spirit tonight. The Holy Spirit, what is He saying to you? Are you one of those that might have walked away? Are you one of those tonight that's coming back? Are you one of those tonight that has resisted this your entire life because you've been hurt and the pain is too great and you've seen too much and you're so disillusioned and all of these reasons, which are very, very legitimate reasons to just want to be done. But I want you to be reminded tonight that the people that hurt you weren't Jesus. But tonight, I believe He does have something very special in store for those of us that would turn our attention towards Him, acknowledge how much we need Him, acknowledge that the Creator of the world saw you from the beginning of time, sent His Son into this world to live this blameless life, to die a brutal death, because He saw you, He saw your state, He saw your desperate need for Him, and He provided a way out, a solution, a way for you to be saved. And I don't want to miss moments like Christmas Eve where we just get to be reminded of why we do this before we step into the chaos that will ensue in the next 24 hours. But for a moment, calm your heart. Where are you at tonight? Are you one that walked away? Are you one that stayed, that just still feels jaded? Are you one that just is in desperate need for something and you haven't known what it is, and maybe tonight Jesus would meet you in this place and allow His light to shine in and through you? Let's sing.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you would like to reach out to us or see what we currently have going on as a church, head to anthemcda.com or find us on social media at anthemcda. We can't wait to see you next week.